And I take for my text this little line that you heard that Lord say to his slave, "Should you not have had mercy on your fellow slave as I had mercy on you?" The unavoidable theme this morning is forgiveness. And that has been true for as long as we have followed the disciplines of the lectionary, not quite from the beginning of time, but at least for about the last 40 years or so. This gospel reading was going to be heard on this day, in the middle of our fractious civic life. It is a teaching about forgiveness, a teaching that takes the form of the answer to Peter's question about how much forgiveness he is expected to give a member of the church. Now, that is a question that begins to take form when Paul addresses a church in Rome and is explaining to them exactly why the quality of forgiveness is essential to the maintenance of a church community. But Peter does not really seem to consider that he needs to figure out how to forgive someone outside the church. His question is about the quantity of forgiveness expected of a disciple. But the answer he gets is about the quality of forgiveness that is expected of us. But I am getting ahead of myself. One of the deepest satisfactions that I have found in getting older is that moment in which I realize that I am being taught something by someone whom I first knew as a student. And that happened to me this week when a young woman whom I first knew as an undergraduate brought to my attention an article from the New York Times. Now, I am sure that Maddie Germer Olson, who is now a teacher in Nebraska, must be an excellent teacher indeed, because she brought this little article to my attention, and I have brought it to your attention on the back of the Psalminser. I hope you have found it. If you haven't, go digging in your leaflet, and you will. The article that Maddie shared with me is by Thomas Edsel, who's made something of a small industry out of studying the divisions and disputes within our civic life. And specifically, what Edsel looks at is our attitudes toward this question: should we forgive our politicians and our public leaders for their personal moral failings? Now, that is not such a straightforward question. We want our leaders to be examples for us, kind of role models. We also live in a democracy, and so we are quite accustomed to the idea that we should hold our leaders to account. The question is, whose account? What standards? What this little article points out, what I've summarized for you in this graph that appeared in the article, is that attitudes on this question have shifted pretty dramatically in our country over the last 6 or 7 years. Those who identify themselves as some flavor of Christian have apparently become a lot more forgiving of our public officials. That's what that rise in the line shows. In fact, it seems the more conservative you are on the Christian spectrum, the more willing you have become to extend forgiveness toward our public leaders in the last, year or so. Now, you might think that that's just because we're all becoming better Christians. Or you might think it's because conservative Christians especially have found that they have a great deal more to forgive in their public leaders. But there is another finding that to me is just as interesting. It is that people who are unaffiliated with any religious tradition, and that is a growing sector of the population, they were less inclined to extend that forgiveness to our public leaders. I don't think it's easy to draw conclusions from this. It seems to me the folks who are not part of any religious community are just about equally likely to be liberal or conservative. And the same is true of those of us who own the label Christian, at least if you put us all together. But what I do kind of wonder about is about whether this is a convenient sort of forgiveness, the sort of forgiveness that reflects our preferences, or at least our willingness to overlook the faults of those who, in our increasingly fractious and polarized society, we somehow imagine are on our side. And at the same time, to demand a full accounting of the public figures who are on the other side. The answer Peter gets to his question this morning comes in the form of a parable. It focuses on the ethical choices of someone who has already been forgiven. And it asks a basic question of moral conduct. Why have you not extended towards someone else the mercy that has been shown to you? When Jesus offers this answer to Peter's question, he is shifting the ground away from a kind of accountant's answer to an artist's answer. It's a lot less about how much and a lot more about just how. How we should live. How disciples should think of themselves as moral agents in the world. When that slave refuses to extend to someone else the forgiveness he once received, he shows that the fact he was forgiven has made no difference in his life. It didn't do any more to open his eyes to his own capacity for getting it wrong, and it did not change his perspective when it comes to others who do the same. He did not understand that he was forgiven in some fundamental way. A way that is meant not just to balance his checking account, but to free him from debt once and for all. He has missed the opportunity he was given. Now, here is the uncomfortable part, friends, for our 21st century American ears. Uncomfortable just as it was for those first century ears that heard Jesus telling this story. We, brothers and sisters, we are meant to understand from this story that we are slaves. We have been forgiven, not just excused, not just accepted. We have been forgiven in a fundamental way. And here is the even harder thing for us to grasp. We needed forgiveness. Something about us, something about this complicated, conflicted person that each one of us is, this struggle between desire and will, this combination of holy and hot mess, something about that, without any consent from us, put us in the need for forgiveness. Whether we know it or not, whether we like it or not, whether we agree with it or not. And let's face it, generally, we don't agree with it. We think of ourselves, you know, pretty good people. After all, we go to church. We make mistakes, but they're not big mistakes. Okay, well, maybe some of them have been bigger than others, but everyone is a good person in the core of their being, right? We really want to think that. We're unwilling to accept the alternative. But if you think that, not a lot of what we do here, not a lot of what the church stands for, will really be all that important to you. If in the end, we don't really think we stand in the need of forgiveness, then all of this is not going to amount to much more than a habit or a comforting routine. It won't bring us to any great realization about ourselves, and it will not love us into change in some fundamental way. And if that is the case, then at some point we will feel that we can either take it or leave it. But if you do grasp that you need that forgiveness, if you do start from the idea that somehow what is being offered to you by God isn't just nice, but urgently necessary, then you will hang on to this for dear life, because dear life is exactly what it is. Now, Jesus doesn't only tell parables about this. He lives it out in the real world. Remember that at a different moment in the story that we have, Jesus comes upon a scene where there is a woman who has done something that is apparently so unforgivable that a mob has gathered prepared to stone her to death. For them, the only path to justice is not forgiveness, it is shame and condemnation and death. And you know how the story goes. Jesus draws a line in the sand, literally and figuratively. He offers gently the idea that anyone who hasn't ever done something that might be categorized as unforgivable should feel welcome to throw that stone. And in that moment, they all realize, every one of them, that every one of them is a slave and fundamentally forgiven, just like she is. I know I've quoted Howard Thurman from this place before, but he is always quotable. Howard Thurman was the dean of Marsh Chapel downtown in the 1950s, a place where, among other things, he was Martin Luther King's preaching professor. When Dean Thurman preached the story about Jesus and the woman and that mob, he says that in the moment Jesus posed that challenge to the mob, each man saw himself in his literal substance. In that moment, each was not a judge of another's deeds, but of his own. But that is not the end of the story. Jesus does not just excuse that woman's mistake, and he does not just excuse ours either. He doesn't just pretend it didn't happen. Here's how Dean Thurman ends that sermon. Jesus met the woman where she was and treated her as if she were already where she willed now to be. In dealing with her, he believed her into the fulfillment of her possibilities. He placed a crown over her head, which for the rest of her life, she would keep trying to grow tall enough to wear.
Wow.
If you think you already are where you will yourself to be, then what the Christian story has to offer you won't mean much to you. And if you have already made a crown for yourself and are contented with that, then you won't be very interested in growing into your full possibilities and standing up to wear the crown that God is holding over you. If you don't think you stand in much need of forgiveness, then it will be very easy for you to find that you have a heart made up of those stones lying at the feet of that mob. It will seem once in a while like the righteous thing to pursue in the good cause of justice is the means of shame and condemnation and even death, the death of human kindness, the death of the possibility of mercy. But if, like the men in that mob, if we can somehow find the grace to hear those gentle words of the teacher and suddenly see ourselves in our literal substance, if we can see ourselves in that slave's moment of desperate emptiness and realize in the very core of our being that forgiveness is not just an option for us, it is an urgent requirement, then we will know how fundamentally forgiven we already are. We'll know why and how much all of this, all we do here, all we say and sing and do, why all of this matters. And then our forgiveness will become our practice and not just our preference. And by the grace of God, that will work in us the change that will give us the hearts of disciples. Amen.